think we've heard different dimensions. Mark talked very concisely about social integration and the ability to and the need for society to fully include people from all social backgrounds. I think having what I would regard a very simplistic debate of faith, funding faith educations versus secularists is maybe not the most productive way forward for any discussion. But if we are talking about a way forward, Tim, the Republic has just had its process of had a forum for patronage and pluralism, and so essentially, particularly with the driving force of the Labour Party there in government now, about developing systems of transition, and so that the church, as I understand it, doesn't see that as a threat. But will we see transition systems for Northern Ireland?
You can check this up, but I forgive me if I do correct you when you suggest, particularly under the influence of the Labour Party, it was the Catholic Archbishop of Dublin who first proposed a forum on patronage. So to go back to the point I made earlier, that's a different debate. That's not about setting aside and creating one secular system. That's about acknowledging that there's been a shift in the population in relation to philosophical attitudes, right through from atheism, humanism, and all the various forms of that, to different religious traditions beyond Christianity. And the church having responsibility, having paid for, by the way. We own our schools in Northern Ireland. There's a big bill to be paid back if you want to follow your resolution through, but a huge bill. It's adjusting to that and saying, yes, we don't have the right to provide beyond what is a legitimate, and the exercise, but I think you will find that Rory Quinn talked about 50% of schools. The forum said about 10% of schools, and we're now going to do, we're actively involved in a community audit type initiative with the government to establish in each of the identified areas what parents want as the resolution. So, we're not a big bad wolf. We are open to adjustment.
Well, that was really my question, you're clearly embracing mechanisms for transition.
Yeah, transition to a diverse, pluralist provision, which needs to adjust from time to time in response to the reality of population. Not a secular system for everyone.
Oh, well, of course. Brian?
I think Tim's argument about a pluralist, diverse society is totally and utterly spurious. It says nothing about the children whatsoever. The children do not experience this diversity and this pluralism. What they experience by and large in Northern Ireland is a Catholic child is reared as a Catholic. He's probably a nationalist as well. He may well be Republican. I don't mean that in a militant sense, but I mean in an ideological sense. And he's probably also a liberal. Whereas a Protestant child, what's a Protestant child? He's brought up largely as a Protestant, a Unionist, a Monarchist, and probably also a Conservative. Now, children are labelled with a whole baggage of ideas and allegiances even before they have time to think about them. What kind of pluralism is that? It's not a pluralism at all. It's a total and complete and utter unified vision that a child receives by going to either Catholic school or what is basically a Protestant school. Let's not pretend it's anything else. Now, the other word that needs to be defined here is the word secular, because it's been bandied about. I don't see, why are these Christians so worried about secularism? Why are they so uptight about it? Look, in a secular school, you can have religion taught. What's wrong with that? By your way, by Trevor, by Brian, by Trevor, by Brian,
education and its ethos is about. It's not about just teaching art in school. By the way, if I might say so, my experience at young people would be much more to their credit than that slavish picture that you present. And it also depends on the rights of parents. What right has any state got to impose a secular view? It's parents who have primacy in this matter. That's what we go about. And there's also the rights of
religious. The child.
Yeah, but the rights of the child are always according to age.
Yeah, but the rights of the child are outlined also.
The rights of the child are not absolutely
the rights of the child are also outlined in United Nations documents, as you well know.
Absolutely.
And those rights include the right to freedom of expression,
correct,
including freedom to seek and receive and impart information and ideas of all kinds. And they also, those rights include things about tolerance and respect and so on. There's
suggesting those things don't happen in Christian schools.
No, hold on. I'm not saying that you do it deliberately.
There's no evidence.
I'm not saying
that
you do it. The evidence here in Northern Ireland, in a society that we've had
so many great, tolerant, active, militant, warring individuals. Where are they?
The evidence is staring you in the face over the last 40 years.
Am I one of them? Am I one of them? What am I doing that's harming society?
Tim, thanks. Tim, Trevor, you want to come in now? some peacemaking, please.
Yes, I'm sitting in the middle here. Could I say that I think for all three Protestant churches, we would acknowledge the right of Catholic parents to choose a faith-based education system, and I think in any tolerant, diverse society, we have to acknowledge that right. The controlled sectors, it's called, where most Protestant children are based, does not define itself as a faith-based sector. Originally, when I agreed actually to come to this conference, your title was about religious instruction, religious education. I agreed to come to talk about that, and then you changed the title. But well done for getting me here. So in the controlled sector, there is not religious instruction. The actual legislation in 1986 sort of talks about on-denominational religious education of a Christian basis. It's not Presbyterianism, it's not Anglicanism or Methodism. There's no religious instruction. It is education. Maybe it's something actually close to what Brands and Dinat. In controlled schools, there's also education for citizenship. There are issues looked at of people who have no faith, of what explanation of what humanism believes. It might not actually be taught in the RE class, but it's taught in the school. So controlled schools are schools where many people choose to go to, and the vast majority of Protestant parents have the right, if they wish to choose to send children to a school which has a Christian ethos. And just as I would defend the rights of Catholic parents, Protestant parents have that right too. I note also on the Northern Ireland Council of Integrated Education website that they define integrated education as being Christian schools, where there's no denominational religion taught, but they have a Christian ethos. So the debate here in Northern Ireland is a debate not whether the integrated sector is a secular sector. It is a Christian sector. And many Protestants and Catholics send their children there and embrace that. Tim admitted that there a need for secular schools to be formed for those who want just secular schools? Well, yes, in an open, tolerant society, perhaps there is. But there's also the right for those parents who want their children to go to a warm, open school with a Christian ethos, which I would think is the controlled sector and the integrated sector also. But likewise, I'd have to defend the right of Catholic parents to have their children go to a school with a Catholic ethos. And that is part of that diversity. The key question is, how do we encourage those children to share, to mix? How do we maximise sharing? And I think we can move forward. I think there's a new era in Northern Ireland. I think there's a willingness to move ahead in that. And we can move ahead in that. We will kill it off by sectarian bigots on both sides of our community who don't want it to happen. And we will kill it off by idealistic people who want to get everywhere tomorrow. If we push a totally secular school system, many Christian parents do not want that. The churches will not be advocating that. There's an opportunity to move forward in the kind of shared education that Tony said. And I would say that large bits of what Tony was talking about, that probably most people in this room and most people from a faith perspective could welcome and embrace and move forward in. So again, I bring you back to your own question for your own debate. How do we achieve something as opposed to make statements?
The question that Trevor and I, as it goes for the integrated sector and the Catholic sector as well, is how you measure the real demand for either a Catholic education or an integrated Christian education or a Christian-controlled school. The demand is only measured by parents choosing to have their pupils admitted there. You know, I've never been surveyed as as to what kind of provision I want. So, you know, we are dealing to a certain extent with a legacy, but we speak a lot about what parents want, and really it's the only measurement for that, as I understand it, is admissions and where they send children. You know, there's a lot of talk, maybe just as a challenge to the integrated sector, Mary, you know, you spoke about them being oversubscribed, but mm-hmm. I thought I did see some figures, for example, mm-hmm. for the four controlled primary schools in the Belfast board, maybe you're not familiar with that, but again, we're still under subscription in that sense, you know. So if we're talking about the parents, you know, the only measurement we have is where they send their children, and certainly demand is not outstripping supply in that case in the Belfast board.
Well, I think, if I'm right, that the two most oversubscribed secondary schools are both integrated colleges, okay? Many of our primary schools are. Some of the schools that are transformed, so controlled, integrated, I'm not sure about the Belfast, I wouldn't have all those statistics, but when a school transforms from being a controlled, which is the state Protestant school as such, quite often it comes because the numbers are dwindling, they're in an area where there's a low birth rate, and to survive, they decide to integrate. Now, some of them do a fabulous job, a really fabulous job, and they do survive, and they do a great service for their communities, there's no doubt about that. But our sector is a very popular sector, and I do think we're in danger because everything is always driven, no matter what it's about, by the powers that be. And if we're going to, if focusing totally on what's right for them then squeezes out the small person or the small sector or the marginalised group of children or whatever it happens to be, there's something fundamentally wrong. And it's very easy to be gracious in a very sort of tokenistic way if you're in the situation of power. And unfortunately, that's what has always happened to our sector. I think it is atrocious that in Northern Ireland, with so many parents asking for integrated education, that never have they once said in that particular area, because, for example, the area I work in, I'm very fortunate, we have perfect balance in our schools. Some of our integrated schools don't, because there are... We're serving an area with a very high level of mixed marriages. We're serving an area where we are right in the middle of also two predominantly Protestant villages. So it's very easy for us to have very good balance and to meet the needs. It would be an ideal area for a planned integrated school. But I couldn't begin to tell you the fight that went on to get our school open. And that's very much the same for every... And the opposition was just unbelievable.
Okay, Mark.
No, I just wanted to comment on. As a trade union, we don't have a remit for promoting one form of education over another. We have members in all the sectors and phases, and actually, we're as a union relaxed about a diversity of provision. Mm-hmm. The issue about whether the current diversity properly measures the need is a different one. I think the issue of jointly managed church schools is also interesting, because I mean my own children went to integrated primary school. I have a pretty unsophisticated view of what it is. It's basically, in my view, that the kids sit down and learn together, they play together, they break bread together, they piss in the same pots. That's good enough for me, you know. That's good enough for me, you know. As it happens, in the primary school that they went to, they probably got treble the religion that they would have got at an ordinary primary school, and I wasn't fussed in that. But I mean, so you know, there is a potential in jointly managed church schools in certain environments. If you have two small primary schools in a village and neither are viable, you know, what's wrong with looking at that? However, in that context, I need to bring it. We, you know, we as teachers' unions also have issues. We currently are actually quite proud of promoting for the first time this year a cross-sectoral, all sorts of schools redundancy trial. So for the first time, we provided a safety net for teachers in the Irish medium, a safety net for teachers in the grant-maintained integrated. And even a safety net for the voluntary grammars, even though some of them didn't think they needed it. They did actually need it. Now, within the context of that redundancy, I'm not saying it's a big issue, because it's not. We had four or five queries this year, no more than that. But there is the issue of if we're going to have a system-wide redundancy pull and trawl, it is difficult for some teachers from one community who don't have a religious certificate to have access to all schools. So we would like to look at, obviously a faith school, say a Catholic school would need, it's a faith school and it has a requirement for enough of its teachers to hold a certificate in order that the faith is propagated. We're not convinced that that needs to be every teacher. And I think we just need a nuanced argument, probably at a lower level than political level, about how we get a circulation of teachers having the same opportunities to be redeployed in the different sectors. And we would like to have that debate, you know, as time goes on.
Okay, thank you, Mark. Okay, well, time has actually moved on very rapidly. I know there's a couple of contributions from the floor. I'm going to take two maximum.
Take them at the same time.
I'll take Ross first, please.
Comment on a couple of points I've heard today, and really I think the main reason that I supported the motion earlier today was looking at the harm that the division in our society actually does to the children and does to society. And I think of my own experience growing up in East Belfast and going to what was for the most part a Protestant school as such, and I came out of that school at 18 incredibly narrow-minded, having really not integrated very well with anyone from the other side of the community. I'm very fortunate that I went on to university and I feel now that I'm a much more worldly person as such, but I feel that the current system, whatever it is, it's not working. And I think that some of the other comments that I've heard today is about this being somehow some form of an attack on religion. And I think John made a great point earlier on, is that, you know, why do we not have the option for children to opt in to religious instruction rather than the option to opt out? And I think that this fundamentally boils down to the point that it should be up to children to choose. I mean, how many children actually choose to go to and say that they don't have the choice, and maybe they should. You know, the point is being made.
Anybody ask 5-year-olds what they think about that?
Well, yes. Well,
what do their parents have no rights?
And maybe if you're talking maybe older than this, you're talking older secondary schools or whatever else. But the point is that children don't have the choice there. But they don't have the choice because first of all, secular schools don't exist. And they don't have the choice to go to Muslim schools or Buddhist schools or any other type of schools. So
maybe
if we can just finish with a couple of the other points. Is that when you also mentioned the point that, you know, civilized societies, that secularism doesn't exist. When you look at America and France, do they not have secular school systems? And I thought, you know, those were civilized societies. And lastly,
I'm not in America.
This is ultimately about how public money is being spent and how money is raised from everyone in society, multi-faith and non-faith society. So why should the state choose which religion, not talking even about Protestantism or Catholicism, I'm talking about which religion should be taught to children. Why is that a choice of the state? You know, it's a choice for children, ultimately.
Okay, thank you, Rose.
A quick one. In America, state funding of religious schools is forbidden by statute. In America, there are not very many sectarian riots on the streets of New York and Boston.
But there are certainly plenty of racial ones. And the tax system is calibrated to allow people to choose and pay for their faith-based education.
Yeah.
Catholics pay taxes here, by the way.
Okay, listen, folks, I'm going to have to draw the beer. I may ask Tony if Tony wants to prefer it. Some of you remember. Yes, sorry, I recognise that we'll take two contributions, okay? Sorry, Derek.
Look, I'm just going to make a few points as well. I mean, I grew up most of my life in an integrated housing estate. In 1981, Lydon College opened this door, and I was one of the first 28 pupils through that door. And it's quite nice to see that 31 years later, our politics is starting to engage in looking at this model of education a wee bit more closely. I think parents in Northern Ireland have shown that there is demand for other alternative forms of education. And one of the things that I learned at the age of 11 was that Catholics and Protestants weren't different religions. and that this word interdenominational came into play, and that was a bit big for me at the age of 11. What is that, you know? So we have a religious education system, and that's a Christian education system. That maybe needs to be addressed, you know, whether we can sustain segregating that further into specific denominational churches in education is something that I think needs to be looked at. It needs to be put out to public debate. And maybe by giving parents an option is where the debate starts, because I think that schools are subscribed for other reasons rather than just they're Catholic or just that they're Protestant. And the other thing is that I now am sitting with the Green Party. I'm a member of the Green Party because our politics has to be integrated as well. So politics and education have to go hand in hand. They have to lead the way and they have to work together. And the Green Party, again, this identity, this tribal identity, this religious identity, this denominational identity, we can work together, we can promote an inclusive message, and we can move forward by holding on to our individual chosen identity.
Okay. Okay, I maybe asked Tony to say some summarising words. I suppose from my own perspective, I should have declared my own hand at the outset. It's very bad for the chair not to do that, I suppose. I'm in a minority in the Green Party. I'm a person of faith, 14 years of Catholic education. Children, you know, when it came to the book, I thought they were going to go the integrated route. And
what a bigot you've turned out.
And I think I was chairing the motion. I didn't speak on it. I wouldn't have had a view on it. But I think the important message I would take in general from today is that, yes, the principal position is one thing, but I actually think it's what Trevor said. It's the, you know, we actually are where we are. You have to deal with the education landscape that's in front of you, and it's actually, to me, the pathway and progress which is important.
Whatever it is.
As opposed, you know, I think that, you know, that's where we need to be, where we need to decide politically as a party where we're going to be. For me, it's about the process. You know, I think some of the things in the coming out of the Patronage and Pluralism report, you know, which, you know, looked at the mechanisms from transition, and as Tim said, you know, the bishops are fully embracing that. And also, you know, elements around the standalone schools, the protocols for standalone schools, how they would make themselves more welcoming. I'm sure none of that, Tim, is a challenge to the sector. And it's just whether there's any signposts there for the sector in the north. I think that's really the question I had. But maybe Tony, I'll ask you to summarise.
Okay, well, I wouldn't claim to be summarising things, but maybe to make a couple of points that just occurred to me during the discussion there. The first point is around parental preference and parental choice, because this is actually quite an interesting issue. I was particularly intrigued by this general debate around the 11 plus and the future of academic selection, because a lot of the debate that was happening was about whether this system would give you better results or this system would give you better results. I was very heavily involved in that debate. And we did a study in OMA where using a process called the deliberative poll, where we polled a group of parents on options, we put them through a deliberative process, give them an opportunity to talk about the issues, and then poll them again. But the most important part about the poll was that it wasn't on abstract issues or about abstract arrangements. It was about what was going to happen in the OMA area itself, based on the sort of the actual sort of the statistics and structure that existed there, and giving them an opportunity to think about options for change. And one of the things that came through very strongly in that particular exercise was that parents, by and large, didn't care about the big abstract structural issues. Parents primarily cared that their child had a reasonable guarantee of a good quality education, and in some senses they didn't care what structures existed as long as that reasonable guarantee was provided. They weren't as wedded to all the different choices and all the different types as the interests were. They just wanted a reasonable guarantee of a good quality of education. And so whenever parents are making choices, it depends very much on the local context, and that's why I have a problem with all the opinion polls which asking, do you want this type of school or that type of school, because I think that's an abstract choice taken in the cloud somewhere. Whenever parents are actually making a choice for their child, and I'm sure many of you, your parents, will agree with this, you actually look at the local schools, and it's based on local reputation, and that's what governs things. So that's just a point on that particular one. The other thing that came through very strongly in the discussion, it sort of reinforced in some senses, I suppose, where I was coming from at the start in the work that we've been doing around shared education, because there's no doubt Tim is perfectly correct, and Trevor's perfectly correct around the issue of rights. And the European Convention on Human Rights does provide
a right for parents to have access to, for minorities to have access to a type of education which reinforces their identities and opportunity to reflect their identity. And there is a right for religious communities to run their own schools. But Brian is equally correct that in our society there is a danger that the sort of structures that emanate from the simple implementation of those rights is a society that's characterised by silos. It creates processes that connect people to people that are like themselves, and that continues beyond school into the wider society. And we create a society which is made up of those types of silos with little connection between them. And I think there's plenty of evidence internationally that the society is structured around those types of silos, particularly where those silos overlap with political divisions and national aspiration and religious identity and other sort of forms of identity, is a society which is at risk of falling apart. And that's why, for me, the attraction of something like shared education is that we recognise and accept the right of people to have their own thing, but create connections so that the silos don't operate entirely separate. Create points of connection between them, create a richer interweave within society. Because again, I think there's plenty of evidence in other societies that where that interweave exists within civil society, that acts as a social safety net against the ethnic intolerance and violence. And I think what it'll do, I think we've already seen evidence of this in the work that we're doing, it will create a different dynamic in the relationship between people and local communities. And down the line, that might provide opportunities and motivation for people to choose other things, but that's up to them to make that choice. The other attraction for me about the sort of thing we've been talking about is it can start working on this tomorrow. And it can actually start to be put in place tomorrow. And I think, having spent a decade arguing over a structure and a system where nothing has changed at all, in fact, in many respects it got worse, I'm quite keen to focus on things we can start change right away.
So, thanks very much, Tony. And just a final comment, I suppose, is I would point to Motion 5, Tim, just... Yeah, we did also pass a motion opposing academic selection, so hopefully that has some congruence with Catholic social teaching.
Yes.
Can I, on behalf of the party, thank our panel? The panel have given up their weekend. We've had a to and fro. We've had a difference of opinion, and we've had a debate. But I want to thank them for their time, which is precious. And maybe to thank Mark and Brian and Tony and Trevor and Mary and Tim for their time this afternoon. And if we could show them our appreciation.